Welcome to the Lights Out Podcast. This is Chris Lights Out Lytle, and this is our journey to document the history of mixed martial arts. I have brought with me my friend, the MMA detective Mike Davis, and together we will preserve the history and hear some great stories from the world in the era of the no holds barred. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Lights Out MMA History Podcast. I am Joey Venti. I'm with the host of the show, the MMA detective Mike Davis. Today we have a very special guest. To the hardcore fans, he's the best referee in the business. To the casual fans, he's the ref with the crazy dreads. And to me, he'll always just be the first guy who ever kicked me in the head. Welcome to the podcast, the reigning MMA referee of the year, my friend Herb Dean. Thank you for being here.
Woo! Thank you for that intro right there. And so I've known Joey for a long time. Just as so the anyone listening, we all started out together with Larry. That's where I met Joey. Where was it? That was on was it on Garvey Street?
At the Boys and Girls Club was the first spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 98, 99, something like that.
Yeah. I thought it was before that, before 98, 99.
That's when I got involved. It was like in 98. But by that point, Larry had already been promoting shows. He'd been doing it.
Right. Well. Okay. So I was already there with him before that. That's right. Okay, knew Larry, but I think I was, I had been training, and you had already known him, but I was training with him before you started with us, right? Okay.
Right. Let's get a foundation here. Larry Landless is the guy you're talking about. So, Herb, what was your core group of guys from the very beginning?
Okay. From the very beginning. Well, okay. So as far as my martial arts history, when I was a kid, I used to, you know, do some karate and some kung fu and, you know, rec center stuff. I learned how to kick and things like that. I've always loved martial arts. And then who started teaching me how to box, I had a friend who had been doing some boxing, and he taught me some boxing fundamentals in the backyard. He was a guy I met at school. He was we both had library as our elective. We would organize the library. It was just two of us. And that's where I met him. And the lady there, she always was looking at him like he was up to something. So it turned out that he was like a tough guy. He was like, you know, from gangs and stuff, but he was real skinny, but he could fight really good. He was not afraid to fight big people. And I watched him, like, first time I watched somebody real skinny with just speed and accuracy, like, beat up these real tough guys that everybody was afraid of. And he was my friend because we like to talk about comic books. We're both nerds, but he was a nerd and a crip at the same time, I guess. I don't know. that's how I started learning about full contact martial arts. And then another friend of mine who I went to school with was a kickboxer. His name was Kevin Schumann. And I would go to watch him fight kickboxing. I was like, okay, kickboxing. I know how to kick. I know how to box. But what I watched him do was like crazy. We were still in high school, just out. And he's fighting, you know, grown up dudes from Asia with tattoos. And it was, I think Southern California had a pretty cool kickboxing scene at the time. The amateur scene, because the pro guys were still guys with the pants and the pads on their feet. But and the amateur scene was a really tough scene because guys were doing leg kicks and a lot of guys didn't know about it at the time. And so that's where he introduced me to Frank Trejo, who was his trainer. And I didn't know like what an honor it was to get to train with Frank Trejo. I kind of learned that as I was there. I would, showing up, he was at a karate school, at an Ed Parker school. But he had a group of guys that he trained kickboxing, and he spent time with me and taught me how to, do kickboxing. And that's where I met Zane Frazier. Zane Frazier, I think it was started at, when I first met Zane, Zane was doing karate. And, you know, I was like, man, that guy should kickbox. He's like an amazing athlete. I mean, Zane was huge, you know, 6'5", probably 6'6", you know, muscled. And I think he played basketball and did point fighting. So really good athlete.
So is this pre-UFC one?
Yes, this is pre-UFC one.
Wow. Okay, you know what? Why don't we get the plugs out of the way? I mean, before we get too deep into this interview, Herb, I know there's things that you're looking to plug. Why don't we get those out of the way in the beginning?
Oh, well, not a lot of things that I'm looking to plug, but one thing I should plug is definitely that I have my MMA referee course, and Savant and I are going to – Savant. I train with Savant. We'll talk about Savant also, but at the Fight Academy. And before he was promoting a show called The Proving Grounds, an amateur mixed martial arts show. And we're bringing that back, and you're going to hear us talking about that more. And also, I do it in conjunction with my MMA referee and judges course and inspector course. And so that'll be happening the week before, and then it'll accumulate, and the guys, the officials shadowing at the MMA event that we're going to be hosting. And that's going to be April, the weekend of April 20. I think it'll be April 28th. We're going to do the show on a Sunday, and then the training course will be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. HerbDean.com is where you find out about it.
And is it in California? Go ahead, Joey.
As a graduate of the course, I just want to say I highly recommend it.
Very Look at that certificate. Look at that certificate.
That's right. That's right. Now,
it's got a picture of me pointing to your name.
That's right.
I went to make a certificate, and like at the printing company I go to, this guy, he's like a cool old guy, like a cool old guy with the ponytail. And he's like, why is your certificate so boring? Here, I'm going to make you something. I was like, all right. Okay, let's go with it, you know?
That's actually pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So you got your certificate. Is that in Los Angeles?
It's in Los Angeles. People from all over the world come and go to it. And it's a really a cool thing I'm excited about. But just so I'll say it again, HerbDean.com is where you find out about it. But what's really cool about it is that people from all over the world come. In California, we have a really organized, they do so many matches. And so now the way we do the course, we go with everything from the beginning. You start out as an inspector, so you get an inspector certificate. So you're showing how, from a regulation point of view, to set up a match, all the things that you're supposed to do. Then we do judging and also refereeing.
So that's in LA, though, correct?
Yep, on Pasadena.
Okay, so that's actually the weekend of Knucklemania for BKFC. Okay. So you're looking at a multi-million dollar fight card with people coming from all over the world just to see that. And they might be able to double down and slide into your course.
Yeah. And also our matches are going to be on Sunday. So Knucklemania will probably be on the 27th, right? On the Saturday.
On the Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, so, and our show, wow, I didn't think about that. Wow, that's good information.
Yeah. So, Joey, anything you want to plug? Savant Young, a name that we trust already?
Yeah. Pasadena Fight Academy, all levels, all ages, from just jujitsu to people starting amateur MMA careers. Highly recommend it.
I do color commentary. I do color commentary. If you guys got an event or a function that you need somebody to host, I'm your guy. Herb Dean, all right, you told us your start. Let's talk about Zane Frazier. Dude, you brought him up. I can't let that slide. Was he as loud then as he is now in regards to his personality?
That kind of grew. He was a little bit, but maybe we all were loud. But no, I think that started growing more and more. Because, you know, we spent time together. We trained and sparred together before MMA and, you know, doing kickboxing. And, you know, Zane was a really... Zane was a big athlete, you know what I mean? So, you know, we had a lot of fun, and we're there at the karate school, the Ed Parker's Kempo, and that's where Frank would use that to train the kickboxers, but also where there's times where we would just be training in Frank's garage, you know? So I got to spend a bit of time with him. But yeah, I'll tell you that Zane became the Zane, that personality started to bloom more and more, you know?
Joey and I did two interviews with him where I think it was, you know, a good interviews, 70% guest speaks, 30% we speak. I'd say it was about a 95-5 with Zane. Mm-hmm.
Right around there.
One of the wildest listens that we probably had all last year.
Yeah, no, Zane is a lot of fun. Did he tell you all those stories? Did he tell you the Frank Duke story and stuff that?
He talked about beating up this guy, beating up that guy. You just mentioned him. Yeah, beat him up too. You know what I mean? It was one of them.
He had us post the affidavits from the LAPD after the assault, everything. Yeah.
I loved it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yo, that whole
he's got a lot of thing, stories.
Yeah. The whole gangster rap thing of here's my arrest record. Man, it started with Zane Frazier beating up Frank Dukes.
Oh, man. Yeah. I heard that story. I heard it from Cecil People. Cecil People was there. He watched it. Here you got to hear. You got to have Cecil Peoples on your show one time.
That'd be good.
Have you had him?
No,
oh,
yet.
Man, Cecil has so many funny stories, and it's all like that. You know, 60s and 70s, like the real karate era, all the way through. So it's like, I mean, it could be like it's hilarious. He has stories about Cecil and I spent a lot of time riding around in a car together, driving all over this part of the country, refereeing fights. And so we'd be in the car for like 10 hours or 8 hours. And he'd be telling me the story of time Jim Kelly, you know, fought this guy. And he showed up with like the full like 70s outfit with the fur trench coat and two girls and everything. Yeah, yeah.
So your referee career started prior to your MMA career, your fight career.
Yes, I started refereeing. I had one slap fight, I think, before that.
It's about the Larry events.
I had one of those. Well, actually, it was a time when Larry took us up to the Shamrocks, and we went against their guys. They didn't put any of their guns in there, like Mikey Burnett or anything like that, but their other guys.
So when I think you say when you say slap fighting, you mean like Pancrase rules?
Yes, yes. No, not slap. Not what you guys see today where people stand there.
Yeah.
That's right. I gotta specify. Pancrase rules.
Uh-huh. Did you ever referee any of the headbutt era matches?
It's possible. As far as if I were to do that, it probably would have been at Mark Hall's. Because Mark Hall kept those rules around longer than others did. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Maybe there. I think he kept those rules around. I'm not sure if I know I refereed some of the kick. And let me think, headbutts? I'm pretty sure I did referee headbutts, yeah.
You may have been at the tail end of the headbutt era.
Yeah.
So, like, if I had to, I've got no, other than my research, I've got no other facts backing this. I think there's only two fighters left on the UFC roster from the headbutt era. Andre Arlovsky, I'm assuming Andre Arlovsky. I don't know that. But Gerald Meerschaert for sure fought under the headbutt rule set.
Well, the thing about it is, I know Andre Arlovsky's been around so long. It's like, but it wasn't in the UFC doing headbutts, I don't believe.
No.
He might have fought somewhere else, like in M1 or something, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where he fought before. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's probably where he did that. It's crazy how long Andre Arlovsky's been around doing this. I think in his first fights, wasn't he like 19 or something like that?
He got knocked out by like Datsik on a somersault kick. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, wow. When he got into the UFC, I think Pedro Hizo, he got knocked out by him real early. That was one of his first ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys have been around forever. So let's talk about the Cobra Fighting Challenge. The California scene prior to organized mixed martial arts, obviously the UFC and King of the Cage, both of which you've made a name for. But there was the Cobra Fighting Championship. There was the Cobra Fighting Federation. There was Neutral Grounds and the Proving Grounds, which was Savant Young's, and Kaja's Cage Combat.
Yeah, Proving Grounds was way later.
But Kaja's Cage Combat, were you involved with any of that stuff?
I just was there as a spectator, or if some of our guys were there, I was going there with them just to support them. Maybe I think we had a guy, Josh, who fought in Neutral Grounds. You know, I went there to help him out, corner him or something, or give him a ride there. You know, so I never participated in Neutral Grounds at that level. I did go train at their gym sometime way later down at 228th Street. And that, I was just watching it. That was such an amazing time, though, right? It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chuck Liddell fighting in your backyard, you know, later becoming, you know, king of the world champion for the UFC. That's pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. Chuck fought in that. I remember they did a show at the Hollywood Athletic Club, I think. I remember Chuck fighting in that. And I'm sure he probably fought in those other ones too. Yeah.
Did he ever referee one of your grappling matches?
He did. I mean, that was at a grappling match. We all went to this grappling thing in where was it? I think it was somewhere in LA. Compton?
I thought it was Compton, Dominguez Hills.
Yeah, I think something like that. And Ahmad put it on. and Ahmad organized it. And, you know, it was one of those things that kind of somehow it kind of went viral, right? Like it was this grappling tournament that, you know, might have been a small thing that everybody started talking about it and everyone showed up and it was really big. That's the first time I saw Eddie Bravo move around. Eddie Bravo went against Charlie Valencia. And and Chuck Liddell refereed me. He was eating a sandwich while he was refereeing the grappling. Yeah, he's like this. You know how Chuck is kind of like, he's eating his sandwich and, you know, doing the Chuck thing and refereeing the match.
Were you at the, and you know what, if I had to pick somebody to referee a grappling match, Chuck Liddell wouldn't make my top 100.
Hey, that's a Division One wrestler, man.
Yeah, he's a Division One wrestler, but he's I mean, here, from the couch. He's not known for his technical ability other than to, you know, put you to sleep.
Well, but he has it. He has
Does
it.
He?
I mean, yeah, but he has it. Like, why? I just go by with Scott Adams. You know Scott Adams?
Of course, WEC. Works for the UFC right now.
Yeah. Right. Have you seen Scott Adams grapple?
He had a pretty good fight career. I have not seen his grappling, but he had a decent fight career.
Scott Adams, a savage grappling. Like, Scott Adams is like, and especially with leg locks, he's one of those guys that, like, one time, our friend Jay, we had one little slap tournament. He submitted Jay twice. He went, and then Jay's like, okay, you got me. You won. But can we go again just because I just, and then submitted him again just like that.
Just as fast.
And Scott tells me he could not do anything with Chuck.
Really?
Yeah. And Scott was like, I mean, Scott is like one of those like guys, like I wanted to roll with him one time. And At this point, I was pretty active and good. And I was pretty decent at leg locks. But I remember I was thinking about rolling with Scott. And I think he was in a grouchy mood. And he's like, I don't know if I feel like playing around with you today. I might hurt you. And I was like, most of the time somebody told me that, I'd be like, well, let's find out. I was like, I don't know if I want to find out. I don't know if I want to get hurt today. Yeah. Because he had nasty leg lock submissions. Really good.
Well, so, go ahead, Joey.
He was talking about how he beat our friend Jay. And our friend Jay was no pushover. Dude. He was a tough guy. So, yeah. Dude, he was 100% legit.
So you guys here, let's talk about your core MMA group. Savant Young, Herb Dean, Joey, obviously you were there. Who else would you put in it? Was Charlie Valencia a part of that?
Definitely. Yes. Jay Martinez, who we just mentioned, definitely a part of it. Joe Camacho was around. Definitely a part
skills.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty of skills. So he's related to Charlie Valencia some way. I think they're maybe
cousin. Huh? He's cousins with Charlie's wife.
Cousins with Charlie's. I was just figuring it out. Yep. Cousins with Charlie's wife. Who else was there? And so Joe Charles was, I would train with Joe Charles. Savant trained with Joe Charles a lot. I got to go out there every now and then, move around with him. Who else was around then?
Dave Rivas came on.
Right. Yeah, Dave Rivas. Hector Ramirez.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Antonio McKee would come through Larry's. And then later on, I used to go out to Antonio McKee's and train with Savant. And that's where I got to train with a lot of really good guys. Vladdy Matryshenko. Quentin would be there sometimes. And, you know, I got to move around with a lot of great guys at Antonio's. But in the early days at Larry's, that group we just talked about, Mike Begg, that was the core group. And the guys who fought in King of the Cage, it would be like Rivas. Charlie Valencia, Joe Camacho.
Yeah. So, Joey, out of your core group of guys, like in the beginning, and we're talking everybody that went on to something, but you guys were hanging on beforehand, where was Herb on that pecking order?
He had better striking than almost any of us. And then that was clear. So we didn't train like full out. We didn't do all that much kickboxing, but it was always really clear that Herb had a lot more polished striking than the rest of us.
I was learning to wrestle there.
Yeah.
Did you foresee Herb you're an internationally recognized person right now. Joey, at that time, did you guys all kind of see that in him?
Not until one of the Cobra Fighting Federations. I was in the corner of one of our guys. His name was Fought, and he was fighting on the card. And I saw Herb run the rules meeting, and he was the main referee. It was the first time I saw him step up like that. And that was the first time it occurred to me that if MMA grew, Herb would have a long-term career in the sport. But I mean, that was a big if. Was the sport going to grow? We didn't know.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting hearing that from someone else's perspective. Yeah. Because, yeah, I was at that, as far as at the gym, I think, well, first of all, this is the Larry Landless show back then, you know?
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Larry Landless, like, he's done a lot, and I've known him for a long time. And one of the times where, like, you know, I wasn't hanging out with him as much, but he called me, and one time he kind of bothered me because he referred to himself as my guy. He's like, yeah, things are, you know, I'm a Herb guy. I'm like, no, wait a minute. I'm a Larry guy. Okay. So all this stuff happened. I was following Larry, had the ability. Larry, first of all, to me, someone who knew that much about grappling, that was a big deal for me. And he taught me, I mean, taught me so much. And guys who came through there taught me a lot. Like Charlie taught me a lot. Jay taught me a lot. But the fact that Larry was organizing all these things, he organized the place for us to train this thing that nobody even wasn't really a real thing yet. He organized events for people to compete in, and he organized seminars, and he organized, like, I got to meet the Shamrocks, you know, Frank Shamrock, and train with Frank Shamrock, and Frank Shamrock showed me how to do Hindu squats and things like that. So Larry was making all these things happen, you know?
Did you ever train with Matt Hume at all?
No, you know, I never trained with Matt Hume. I might get to sometime soon because I work with him a lot now. And they train every now and then. I interacted with him, but my most interaction with Matt Hume was when Pride came to Nevada, to Vegas. And he was giving me, we all went out to dinner and talked about the differences between refereeing in Japan and refereeing here in America, and just the differences and how they would like to keep a lot of their Japanese flavor and where it came from, and the certain things and why certain things were done a certain way. And I learned a lot, and it made me think about refereeing a lot and kind of understanding just hearing that. So that was a really good conversation for me, but no, I'd never trained with him.
Okay. So Herb, there's one thing, performing a job and doing it well. And then there's another thing, taking control and command of the job and giving orders and taking that that head position. And you obviously, like you obviously have that in mixed martial arts. Where do you think, like in your career, were you able to kind of gain that confidence in order to assert yourself the way that you do?
Well, I think I'd had, I wasn't afraid of being in front of people, and I'd organized things on my own things, you know, like I know Savant from, when we were younger, we used to like to do open mic hip hop. I used to organize events, and I organized a open mic thing, you know, like Eminem's 8 Mile. I had one out here in California. I used to, it was at After Hours at the E-Bar. And in that days, a lot of people knew about it. People knew about it from both coasts. And so I was used to being a little bit of an organizer myself, you know, but in this, I was definitely following Larry. Okay. And I think Larry, you know, he gave me some trust and position, because he would bring all of us guys, like Joey included, to help him out. And, you know, as far as for all the positions, like the inspector positions in the back, making sure, teaching guys how to inspect gloves and things like that, and how the walk should be done to make sure that once you had inspected it, nothing comes in contact with it once you've approved it. And he would bring us to do it. And he gave me a little position to keep an eye on things where and when he wasn't there.
If I had to pick one moment where I had to stop and pause, yeah, it would have been UFC 86 and say, hey, man, this guy is, leave him alone. Let him do his thing. You better worry about other people. UFC 86, the Patrick Cote versus Ricardo Almeida fight. Yeah, huh. I'm going to be throwing, wait, Herb, I'm going to be throwing stuff at you. You have done thousands of matches. You might not know what took place, but like, I'll throw a little bit more in there so you can expand it. Do you recall that fight?
No, I know those two guys pretty well. I'm trying to remember that fight. Where was that? Was that in?
Wait, here. Patrick Cote, Almeida's glove was torn on the lining, and Cote was complaining about it. You stop the match, you inspect the glove, you send it over to the commission. The commission takes a look at it. They kind of tuck it in. They send it out, and you go, no. That's not how we're fixing this. Give me a scissors. And you cut the lining of the glove. And it was right after the Randy Couture incident where the lining cut his eyelid or cut his eyeball.
Ruining a main event. Nah, I don't remember that. But you know, when by the time I had gotten there, I had refereed so many matches and been around so many guys and you know, and having Larry around and other guys around to help me out. So, you know, and also from doing this job, I from the beginning, I was so happy. I've always taken this job from a service point of view. I'm here to facilitate. So how can I think of the best way to do a workaround? When we get here, you know, early days, inspecting cages and everything was always falling apart. And I'm not coming from a point of view of, hey, this isn't working. And I said, you can't do it. It's like, okay, how can we fix this? So that's what I'm always trying to do.
I think that's the most important thing. It's just, let's have a positive outcome like this, whatever negative it is, let's just kind of get it to where everybody's comfortable. That's super important when approaching issues. Joey, in our prep for this, one of the matches that you had mentioned was King of the Cage 11, September 29th, 2001, Bobby Gamboa versus Charlie Valencia.
Yeah, this was the first time they fought. Charlie does an overhead slam of Bobby Gamboa. Gamboa's shoulder pops out. He's underneath Charlie. He's in guard. And he's on top of Charlie somehow, but his shoulder's out and he's asking Herb, pop my shoulder back in. Now that sounds ridiculous, but I've seen it done at Kaja's Cage Combat where the ref just popped the guy's shoulder back in and then let them continue.
Herb probably didn't do that.
No. You acted like a professional and did not give medical attention that you weren't qualified to give.
Yeah.
On camera. Yeah, that would have been a bad move.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it done. Other people do it. But yeah. I definitely wouldn't have done that. But you know what's so funny? There's so many things. Like when I think back about those days, so many of the things we did were like, we would not do today. And it was all learning in process, you know? And we had so many rules, like so many things or traditions or rules, like the fact, like in other combat sports, do we always ask people, are they ready before they fight? I think it's only in MMA, right? Are you ready? Are you ready? You know what I mean?
Boxing doesn't.
No. Boxing doesn't, kickboxing doesn't. It's Big John did it. So we all do it, you know? We have to ask them. This is something more than everything else. We got to ask you, are you ready for this? Are you ready?
Did you ever attend the Hitman Fight Promotions of Paul Herrera, Tito Ortiz?
Yes. I'm not sure how many of them I did. Was there one? Which one are you thinking of?
I think there was three that they did, three in total.
Okay. Now, there was one that they did that was a lot of fun. There was one on an Indian reservation. I think it was the Cahia Creek. I think it was. Where was that? Is that the one you're thinking of?
There's no video. Video doesn't exist. But this is the promotion where they went around the rules of the state of California and said, this is just a movie shoot. Here are our results. And whatever happens, happens. And the fighters were kind of in on it, saying, hey, man, we're fighting, but we got to get around the commissions and rules by saying it's a movie set.
I'm not sure if I was at that one. Maybe.
That was at like two of the three of them.
Okay. Well, I was at one where I'm pretty sure it was Tito's show where, and it might've been one or two that I did, but you ever see that movie, Here Comes the Boom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it has all these funny things that happen at fights.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the guy who was the advisor for that was from around the fight scene. I forgot who the guy, but he was a trainer. And he was there for all of these events. And all those funny things that happened were at events that we had been at. So remember the part where where heavyweights are fighting and one guy body slams the guy and the whole cage falls apart?
Yeah.
That happened at that event.
There was a Chael Sonnen event where it broke the boards and they were told you can't fight in this area of the cage.
I think he was fighting Mayhem Miller.
Was it Mayhem Miller or was it Babalu?
I think it was Miller where the cage broke.
Okay. Okay.
Now was that Mayhem Miller in, because Mayhem Miller was probably in the Here Comes the Boom. Was that, are you talking about in the movie or are you talking
No. Against Chael Sonnen is where the cage. Right. That's what he said in our interview.
Yeah, it might have, but that cage might have, because I think one of those events, I know that cage, that I was really afraid because heavyweights were fighting. And I think Scary Jerry was fighting, the Titan, Jimmy Ambrose.
These guys are huge. Yeah,
these guys are huge. I remember that was definitely me making a mistake right there. I remember Jimmy Ambrose had him in a head and arm choke. But it just looked like a head and arm hold because, you know, I mean, there's a certain way position you have to be in to make that choke successful. And it looked like he was just holding him down. But I stood him up. And he was like, no, I don't want to get up. I'm like, yeah, you have to get up. So then he ends up knocking him out. And after that, I refereed him again. And I see that same position, that same choke. I'm thinking, there's nothing here. Why are we going to lay around there? And he choked someone out. And I, you know, I'm like, whatever I think I know, the bottom line, when two people are that big, you know, stop trying to think you're some little choke nerd or whatever. You know what I mean? You got to respect it. But yeah, I remember that happened at that event. The cage fell apart from the big body slam. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
What do you know about that event? What made you think about it?
Well, here we... There's a little bit of a mental illness, OCD, that goes into our preparation for this. And every person we've had on, Chael Sonnen, Babalu, Chris Brennan, a few others, they all say, well, the result was not actually what took place because it was a movie set. And Joe Rogan recently addressed it on his podcast.
But so, the fights, those guys were fighting.
They were legit fights.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Legit fights, but the results aren't really what it is. Yeah, they say they are. What about Ultimate Athlete 2? Were you at the riot with the Mongols?
I definitely was there. Yeah, that was a crazy story. I was there. I think Ultimate Athlete 1.
One was in Hammond, Indiana. Two was at the casino.
Okay, then I didn't. Maybe I'm mixing that with Ultimate Pancration or something. That was at the same spot.
At Morongo, yes. They were both
at Morongo. Yeah, they're both. So, yeah. So Ultimate Athlete 1, 2. I was there. I remember that... I was refereeing matches. I think that the match that you guys are thinking about, the one with Rick Slayton, that's the famous match. And he's fighting a Russian kid. What's the guy's name? I think he was from Russia.
Slayton versus, I got it right here. Oh, no, I just got Rick Slayton. Yeah. He was losing, and then his biker gang.
But it was weird. Okay, so first of all, that was a real scary thing, a real scary time, because, I mean, that was a pretty scary bike gang. Those guys were like, I got there and I remember I was there and I went to the bathroom and they were all in there, just like probably like, well, who knows what they're doing. And when I walked through the door, they all turned and looked at me. I was like, I don't want to be in. So anyway, I'm doing my thing. Whatever I gotta do, I'm leaving. I'm like, man, it's pretty intense. And you could tell they had a reputation for things happening and they kicked it off pretty fast. Like, it wasn't that he was losing. I think there was a groin shot, and it was stopped. The guy who was the referee was Sost Infante. And there was a groin shot, and he stopped it. And it could have continued, but they were just ready to go. What are you about to say?
Sost Infante is an old-school ref. Few fights. Joey, in our prep, he got brought up. I am shocked that you remember his name.
Well, because he started out early with me, And he was one of Ted Williams' guys. And, you know, we probably trained together every now and then. And he was I was happy to see somebody I knew when we got there to do it. So, yeah, he was a friend of mine. I haven't seen him for years, but he's a good guy.
So you knew in the bathroom that there was just some bad energy going around.
Yeah, that it was really. And so right away, when that break happened, I remember they started throwing things down from wherever they were, throwing whatever they were throwing lunch. And somebody started throwing stuff back. And then that's all that happened. They came down, and it was like nothing I've ever seen before. They just started beating people up. And you could tell, like, they did this a lot. Like, guys were splitting the two. They were like, they were holding on to people. It was like the cartoons, like punching someone back and forth between two people, you know. And I remember they were trying to come into what we call the technical area, like an area that's kind of roped off around the cage where broadcast is at and, you know, the, you know, whatever referees and judges are. And they're trying to come in. I was like, if they get in here, it's going to be bad. I see a couple of guys come in. So I head them off. I'm like, no, you can't come in here. And the guy looked at me, and it was two or three of them. He looked at me. He's like, he walked away. But when he walked away, he pulled out a necklace, which was a flat knife, like a flat. It's flat, but it's like a razor. Like when you, and he's like, hey, this is what you're messing with. You know what I mean? Huh. And but he walked away. He's like, I'm leaving now. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know why he left. You know what I mean? I think he left and just decided to put me on game. Like, hey, you don't know what you're playing with. This is what's going on here. And I went and I got the security. I told the security, I was like, hey, there's a guy over there with a knife. He's like, where? And I pointed at him. He ran the other way. And then they just started going. They were beating people up. And I remember they were this girl, they're beating this guy up on the edge of the ring. This girl jumps in the ring. I guess it's her boyfriend. She's kicking him through the ropes of the ring. And they grab her and they're trying to pull her out. They're going to beat her up. And Sost and I, we're hanging on to her. And we're kicking these guys, trying to pull this girl back in. We get her back. And then it was like on one side, all of the chaos, most of it happened on one side. And on that side, it was like a movie scene with like people holding knife wounds. A lot of people had been stabbed. And with everything you see in the movies, like, hold on, don't let go. All the screams and that whole war scene looked like. Then I remember on the other side, my parents were there. And they were next to the, with the Indian reservation guys, the guys, you know, the tribal commission. Those guys were laughing. They thought it was all funny because all of them are armed to the hilt. Wouldn't have been a good scene, you know? So they felt very comfortable.
What did your mom think about your career choice after seeing that event?
She was sitting next to them. So she didn't see all, she was like, wow, that was crazy. But people who were sitting on one side, didn't see the chaos that happened on the other side. So me standing in there, that was one of the things that was a big contrast for me. It's like, it's crazy how just a few feet over, people can be so oblivious as to what's happening on this side as to these guys over on this other side. So they were on the good side.
I was going to say, because MMA didn't have a great reputation anyway at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think she would be telling you, get the hell out of this event or get the hell out of this profession.
They're used to me doing silly things.
Yeah.
That was like, this is Herb again, you know?
Yeah.
King of the Cage. You guys had a all-star crew in regards to people working it, whether it's behind the scenes or in front of the cameras, one of which was Rafael Torre. I've never heard you go on record speaking about your interactions with him. And obviously you guys knew each other.
Oh, definitely knew it. Yeah. I remember Rafael Torre. He was, he was there. He was a big part of the scene. He was really outspoken. He talked a lot. You know what I mean? And he was one of those people that kind of like, first of all, I trained with Robert Ferguson a lot too. And him and Robert did not get along at all.
Wait, you talking about Prince of Leglocks, Robert Ferguson?
Yes, exactly.
Come on, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I spent a lot of time with him. And him and Ahmad, and you know, we all and so they didn't get along. And so
What was the reason?
I think they just sparked both of them were pretty active early days on the underground. And so they would end up sparking off at each other, and that was that. And so anyway, they didn't get along. But some of the good thing about Rafael Torre is like, he was really one of those people who were like, hey, we're involved in something special right now. And he would really pump everybody up. I remember one of the first times we were on a plane together. We all got flown. The King of the Cage went to Michigan the first time. And then we were on a bus, and Terry organized all that. It was like, it was crazy. It was like a big deal for me. It was like, what we're doing is so important that people are going to fly us all out here and then get a bus or a van and get us all out to this reservation. I mean, I was always so happy if somebody gave us a parking lot to do it in. And remember, we're on the plane and, you know, we're doing this, and he just started chirping off. He's like, Quentin Jackson's on this plane. So-and-so, so-and-so's on this plane, of course. Rafael Torre's on this plane. And I don't know, that was a fun energy about him. But of course, you know, there's a lot of other stuff too.
When did you kind of think that the wheels might be coming off of that car?
Well, that fight with the guy, I think that
Loca, yeah, Big Joe, Loca Tianue, or yeah, Tianu.
Or yeah, I'm not sure. He was a Islander, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We definitely knew that that was. And I was looking at Rafa. I was like, man, aren't you training? Or, and I remember him just talking about his preparation. He's like, he's asking the people he's talking to in training. He's more interested in talking to Brad. Do you remember Brad, the icon, yes, the king of the cage?
He was the guy that opened and shut the door. Yes.
Yeah. 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 So he was more interested in how he was going to look in there from that aspect. I'm like, well, why are you spending all your time talking to Brad about training tips? You know, you're about to fight. He's like, well, no, I know I'm going to win the fight. I just want to look good. So I just want to spend some time getting some pectorals. And I was like, And then you saw the fight. Yeah. Huh?
I think, Herb, that was a politically correct way of saying he's looking for some gear and he was talking to Brad.
Yeah.
But he just wanted to make sure he was looking good. Not about
he went to the right guy. He went to the right guy.
Yeah, he went to the right guy because he knew he was going to win the fight. You know,
You reffed that fight, right?
I think it was Larry.
Okay. Yeah. And then when you heard all the stuff that came out about that, that was just with him and the lady, and the whole thing was just that was horrible.
Yeah, April Richards and Gerald Strevent. Yeah, we just had Gerald on. We had Gerald on a couple of guests ago. Mm-hmm. And where people really come down on Gerald is, well, you didn't come up sooner, you know, in regards to the murder for hire. And Gerald's response was, well, I wasn't sure if he was really lying or just like bullshitting me. And you could sit here and go, okay, roll your eyes at it. But Chris Brennan, Eddie Bravo, and Joe Rogan all had to also go testify because they weren't sure either.
So, and it's the truth, because you never know what he was going to say. There's times where, you know, there's, you know, Kumite champions and this and that and that or whatever. There's always something. There's always something extraordinary going on. So I those guys, the way they felt about it was absolutely correct. You never knew.
Let's even push it further. So Raphael's the type of guy to where he's going to give a gun to somebody and go, yeah, man, I really had to do something, and really embellish. And right. if the police case was so strong, they would have charged April Richards as well, but they never did. They never even charged his wife.
Really?
He may not have done it. He may have lied himself into that.
But
he may have lied himself into a life sentence in prison. Like, actually lied himself into that for cool points, street cred.
Right. But it was somebody, the way the guy was put away was a choke, right?
It was a choke, but the evidence used against him was a gun. A gun was never used, but it was dude that died's gun. Hey dude, it's so like,
so you know more about it than I do, then.
Bro,
because you're the MMA detective.
That's what I'm talking about, Herb Dean. Uh-huh. I had a guy go there and do the math on how he got to this place or that place. He got a ride. If he did it, he got a ride. He didn't run.
Right.
So it is what it is. Let's talk about King of the Cage. What's your favorite KOTC moment?
Okay. You know, there's so many. I'm not a good guy for my favorites, but I'm going to tell you, well, the first thing that came to my mind was when Rami Arum beat Jerry Bolander.
Oh my God, bro. Yeah.
Okay, so when he was fighting, because we all looked up to Jerry Bolander so much. We all, like, you know, and the fact that he was in our events, and the, like, it was like, you know, because he's a former UFC guy. He's from the Shamrock. He's from the beginning. It's like royalty is coming to participate with us. And Rami just got it. And it was like, this is real. It was like one of the first things that to me, it was like, what's going on here? These guys can compete against anyone. And the part that really made it was Javier, because Javi's in his corner and Javi's reaction, because Javi is such an intense, special dude. Javi, you know, and Javier Vasquez. He's so intense and he's so talented and gifted. He's everything together. He's obsessed and gifted. He's always coming up with so many creative things, but also his work ethic is, you know, he's driven, he's emotional. So Javi, you knew right when they start to win, I look over because I know Javi's going to be bursting into tears. You see, because, you know, because he's that kind of guy. You know what I mean? He's just so emotional. Like, if he doesn't cry before the fight, people are worried, you know? So I see him winning. I'm going, okay, where's Javi at? I see Javi, right? That was just a whole, that was a very goosebumps feeling of that moment, of that whole movement being a real thing. That's one of the biggest things of it being a real scene that I remember.
The Ken Shamrock and Lion's Den guys, like Tony Galindo was a Lion's mm-hmm. Den guy. Uh-huh. They were pretty notorious back then for creating issues and handling their business behind the scenes.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and there was a few camps that were like that. And Tony Galindo, I mean, basically back then, I mean, there's so many things that could have easily been fixed. But King of the Cage, believe it or not, like cage design has come so far since then. So, I mean, you have this cage and we're trying to figure out different ways to keep it closed. So we have like a gate and you have the latch that, you know, you would have on your gate at your house. And of course that thing gets bent as soon as a couple of heavyweights hit it. So you have to fight it to get it open. And so back then, part of the sport was, how many times can I beat on the guy before the referee can pull me off? And if he's in a bad position and I'm strong, how many times can I get him, sock him up before the rest of the referees jump over the fence and help him? Because they're going to have to jump over the fence, because once a couple of heavyweights have messed up the latch, you couldn't get it open. Then the next thing they came up was with a bar, but there was no latch to hold the bar in. So the bar is constantly about to be scooted up and the gate's going to fly open. So between every time the guys got there, it was the referee's job outside to hold the bar down to keep. It was crazy, but
that was fighters used that bar to their advantage. Like Joe Stevenson did it.
Joe Stevenson is yes, and Joe Stevenson was the expert of that. Joe Stevenson knew exactly where first time he took somebody down, he was going to bring him over to another. But that's a different bar I'm talking about. There's a few bars, but that was a rabbit trail. But what I'm saying is that in the early days, every fight, the referee was responsible for wrestling the guy off, you know, just about, you know. And so, and nowadays when I've been caught off guard, when I come in to stop guys and if they're still going and maybe slightly out of position, like, okay, you got to always be ready, because now guys stop when you tell them to. But then they never did.
Galindo was famous for that.
Galindo, never stopped, you know. And what's funny is like, you see, you know, somebody who was like that and you would think, man, what a bad guy. But I would tell you, like, with fans and with interacting with people, he was always so great. When he'd give his autograph, he would take so much time. He would write Tony the Ghoul Galindo, he'd draw a little picture of a bull and the whole shot and, like, interact with that person. It's like, okay.
When Ken Shamrock had his issue with Mark Hall, and Vernon Tiger White and Tony Galindo kind of stood security while Hall and Shamrock beat up Mark Hall. I mean, you were at the event, not there at the incident, but what do you recall hearing?
Okay. What I remember from that event was when I remember getting there and I saw Ken Shamrock and Ken was in a mood. And, you know, it wasn't my first time meeting him, but he looked pretty focused. And he was very angry. He was in a mood, and he looked like he was looking for somebody to interact with. I didn't know that it was going to be that, but I knew that he wasn't happy. And I knew I didn't want to talk to him. I was like, okay, he's got somebody he needs to talk to. Stay in, you know? Yeah. And so I remember him going by, and then I remember I was walking, and I see blood everywhere. So I see blood here, blood there, and like a lot of blood. And then someone comes running out from behind, you know, from the back and goes, Ken Shamrock just beat up Mark Hall. Somebody just go. And I remember the guy, there was somebody there and goes, so what happened? He goes, yeah, Ken just started punching him. And he goes, well, that's it. He goes, and he got on, Mark Hall didn't use the guard. I mean, he didn't get him in his car. It was like, no, he just socked him up. But that was my experience of it. I didn't see it happen. I think I must have been one corner around because it happened, and I walked right around. Blood was still fresh. It was just there, you know.
I mean, is there any talks of maybe we suspend Ken from the events? Maybe the Lion's Den guys need to take a little time off? Any of that?
No, not even a little bit. At that time, no. It was the wild, wild west. It was, definitely. It was, I think, big credit for Big John for establishing the fact that the sport had a referee. Some sort of, you know. And so one of the things, you know, I think that even though it was the wild west, everybody was so happy that we still got to do this. So as a referee, I think if I just showed up and was consistent and was there from a attitude of service, but at the same time, making sure I knew what my job was and was going to do it no matter what, people in the sport respected our sport and the fact that we had a referee, you know, because it, as far as for what you could imagine, that it was, you know, all the alpha males from the surrounding area there, and there's supposed to be some order. Yeah, things like that happened. But at the same time, people had a lot of respect for what we were building there. So I think everybody worked to keep themselves in line to some degree.
I think the attitude also is what people, they kind of miss on is compared, like Sean Strickland, outrageous, says crazy things, makes you hold your head. That type of attitude, I'm not saying skill level, but that attitude, in just after the no-holds-barred era, it was an entire locker room full of that.
Actually, to be honest, is that in the beginning, it wasn't like that. In the beginning, everybody was very respectful. Well, yeah, in the Midwest is different. In California, it was the Midwest was there. And I saw the Midwest shows, and the Midwest shows had that energy. And at the same time, the Midwest shows were like, I think MMA, I think you guys were before us, right? These shows. Yeah, you guys were doing these shows in MMA. So in the beginning, when ours started, it was like guys being able to do everything at once. Like, okay, there's jiu-jitsu, there's this. You guys were having MMA fights.
Yeah,
and, that's and true. So at that's the beginning, true. Everybody Man. Was so respectful out here that they were just so happy to be able to do it. And everybody was coming from a respect and martial arts kind of view. But, you know, Josh, I think his name – I mean, I don't want to tell people Santa Claus isn't real. So I don't want to say what his name was, but I think I know his name because I trained with his brother also, who's a really good wrestler. But anyway, he was the first one like, oh, so you're a bitch ass, whatever, and you're a bitch ass, and you're gonna get knocked out, and then I'm gonna knock his bitch ass out after that. He was the first one to start doing that at King of the Cage.
Before Antonio McKee?
Maybe not. I'm not sure. But
Antonio throwing bitch asses around is such a regular part of Antonio's vocabulary. You might not have caught it. It might have been.
Right. I got to spend a lot of time with Antonio. Yeah, the Antonio's one. But it was like it was a shock when, first came around doing that. But I think there are some other guys who were doing it. But a lot of guys, most of like MMA out here back then, did not have that vibe. That started, I remember when that started changing the King of the Cage and the trash talk started happening back then. What do you remember, Joey, as far as for being out here at that time?
I agree. In the very beginning, it was super respectful. And I don't know if it's because in California, we're more spread out. So maybe being the tough guy in your neighborhood, maybe you didn't get tested as often as the Midwest guys. I don't know, but it did start off as super respectful. Like if I ran into another guy with like a tap out sticker on his car, that was always like the nicest guy. The fact that you train and I train, like we were going to be fast friends. We had something in common.
But no, I think because it started out there first and in the Midwest and with the way, but also because it didn't come from martial arts gyms, right? It was mainly like guys who just wanted to fight, like wrestlers
versus karate guy.
And just tough guys just fighting. Audience. It wasn't like, like it was audience. So it was a little bit different, you know? And guys who came out, had a lot of, you know, from the Midwest, guys that had a lot of experience already when they were coming out here, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, here, there was a lot of jealousy of the West Coast from the Midwest, because a West Coast guy would have four or five fights and be in the UFC. And meanwhile, like Josh Neer or Phil Johns, let's go old school, Phil Johns, they'd have to have like 25, 30 fights before they'd even get a look. But then again, California, you guys had a higher caliber of athlete because you can train year round, and they're a little bit more seasoned than the Midwest guys. And that's a fact. That's a fact.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. It's more, I think we have a mecca of martial arts. So it's like some things were more seasoned, but as far as for having a place where you could go punch somebody in the face, I mean, some of these shows were like weekly, right? Like at a bar, like big bars, and they're weekly, having weekly MMA shows where they're going no holds barred, not slap fight, and it's right in town, you know? Whereas to punch someone in the face, in the beginning in California, that wasn't legal until like 2006. You had to go out on an Indian reservation in the city, you had to do a slap, you know? So there's not one way where you could say one scene was so much more advanced all the way. These guys did more of one thing, and out there, you guys had some other things going.
You could have fought like on a weekend, a regular weekend in the Midwest. Let's call it 4 hours driving from Chicago. There may have been 12 shows every weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's when you got like guys with Travis Fulton with 300, 400, 500 fights on their record.
Right.
You
know, exactly. That's what I was going to mention. Travis Fulton. What about Adrian Serrano?
Adrian Serrano legit took tough fights. And, you know, the last of that bastion of guys with hundreds of fights, you know, Shoney Carter's in there as well. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Ivey.
Yeah, like Jonathan kind
of
Ivey.
The last of that wave. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of guys out there.
Mm-hmm. Your first fight was after you started refereeing, August 9th, 2001, Gladiator Challenge. You fought Randy Halmut.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I think the only time I'd had anything like that with MMA rules was I did the Shamrock thing where we did the pancrase. Then actually to do MMA was, you know, I referee fights. And by then, I probably wasn't thinking I'm going to be like, a fighter. It's just like I like to train. And mainly the reason why I did it is something to kind of motivate me to actually go for a run and actually not be as fat and stuff like that. And I got to fight Randy Halmut, and everything went my way. Everything, so it was like everything that I trained, everything that I imagined. I remember I kind of faked the jab, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to let him see the jab, and then I'm going to throw the jab while I'm doing a switch kick. So he'll see the jab and won't see the switch. And he slipped the jab and ran right into the kick. And then he tried to tackle me. I was like, okay, I got to do something. I think he's hurt. I got to hurt him. So I hit him. And I remember I broke my hand. I remember it was weird. I remember my mind freeze framing, like that motion of him punching, that motion froze right there. Like my brain said, something important just happened. And, and that's what I remember. It's like a freeze frame. Then the punch hit him. And then I ran and jumped on top of him, put my weight on him and choked him.
You know,
and everything moved my way.
Yeah, he's out of Roseville Jiu-Jitsu. And when it went to the ground, like, you know, back then, man, who knew what? And
Well, it's funny. He probably, I don't know how much training he had. I don't know. Because he was actually Uriah Faber's friend. So Uriah Faber's like, he's like, yeah, that guy's my friend. We're buddies. And, you know, and I was just talking to him. I was like, man, everything you don't want to happen to you happen. And I was like, man, well, it's sad because everything happened for me. It makes it look like he's not very good. He's like, well, you know what I mean? So that's what, but yeah, everything, it was like a lucky thing. Everything that I threw worked.
On January 18th, 2003, how do you get wrapped up in Rage in the Cage in Arizona Roland Saria is the promoter. Joe Riggs is the opponent. He says, like, there's a lot wrong there.
He's like, hey, you want to come out and fight this guy, Joe? And I was like, okay, sure. I'll come out and fight Joe. The thing about it was weird. It was that the rules weren't. They were telling me that there's supposed to not be punches on the ground. There's supposed to be slaps on the ground. Joe tried to come and tell me that, hey, this is what we say, but he was trying to tell me that it's going to be the other way on the ground. But I think somebody ran him off. I don't think he's like, we need to talk. And, yeah, you know, I got in there and, you know, had some, you know, he threw me and I was kind of, he hit me with a big shot. I was kind of dazed.
Is this heavyweight Joe Riggs?
Yeah, okay. I hit him with a good kick and a good punch. And then he hit me with a throw. And I think the throw, I was dazed. And he was like, I just remember sitting there going, what, trying to move. Like, and then he hit me with some punches and I was done.
The thing about Riggs, if you go pound for pound, toughest, like hardest ground and pound punchers, Fedor, Joe Riggs are the first two that come to my mind that are 100% on that list.
And let me tell you something. That was before he really got his ground and pound game together. Like he was already tough, but you know, I'm always a Joe Riggs fan because anybody, oh, yeah. I mean, most people, I mean, I'm a fan of his to begin with, but then on top of it, the added bias of the fact that he whooped my ass. I don't ever want to see anybody else whooping his ass. That's like a vicarious ass whooping for me. You know what I mean? Like, damn, now you going to let him kick our ass too? You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, no, I was always a big fan of him. And like, his ground and pound was another level. Never saw anybody who could just turn and generate the best.
His torque is unreal.
Unreal. Unreal. Yeah.
Do you remember what took place between Todd Medina and the promoter that event?
I remember Todd was there and I remember something happened, but yeah, I don't remember that wasn't probably on the top of my list. I think there was a bunch of stuff that happened. You know, I think Ahmad fought Edwin Dewey's too. I remember that. And
Todd fought Edwin Dewey's.
Todd fought Edwin Dewey's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh. I felt maybe Ahmad fought Edwin Dewey's another time.
Yeah, he headbutted. Medina headbutted Roland Saria because he thought he got chipped on a fight.
Oh, okay. Well,
in the ring.
Medina,
in the ring.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then chased him around backstage.
Yeah, Jeremy Jackson was on all those trips with us too. Do you remember Jeremy?
Scorpion.
Dude,
he's getting out soon.
I know. That's so unfortunate because he got railroaded.
Well, you know, here. So I just got some prison letters from him, from a guy, Hong Kong Fooey on mixedmartialarts.com. He's one of the moderators over there. He sent me some old prison letters from Jeremy. And here's the reality of the situation, and it's ugly. Whatever took place that was their relationship, I'm sure it was very non-traditional, the way they talked to each other and handled things. Mm-hmm. But one of the jurors, Jeremy, when it was about time to wrap up the case, demanded to plead guilty. He didn't want to be there anymore. He didn't want to hear from the judge, the jury, nobody. I want guilty. Like he had a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
One of the female jurors went on TV and said, "This is wrong.
Yeah.
This is wrong." Like a female juror. And he just,
a lot of people ran into those jurors and the female juror says, "We were," and she wasn't speaking for just herself. She said, "We were never going to convict him." But wow. The way, I mean, our legal system is messed up with the way, first of all, like the things that we take for granted, like the fact that the police charge you with something far beyond what they believe you did, so that it would plea down and then meet in the middle somewhere.
Here we go. And dude, 15 years of law enforcement. There is applying justice and then there's winning. And winning is not applying justice. Like if you and I have a conversation, are we meeting in the middle? Are we discussing ideas? Or is one of us trying to win? Because when one of us is trying to win, it's not a real good exchange. Can we agree on that?
Right. But what I'm trying to, let me finish this statement I'm saying. Sorry. It's common practice to say, and they know, they go, well, we're going to charge him with this. And the police say, well, I charge him with this because what he really did was this. And then what's going to probably happen is it's something in the middle and it's going to be more than really what the charge was, but, or maybe whatever. But it's just like, why do we even have to play those games? Why don't you just get charged with what you're being charged with? You know what I mean? And so what I'm saying, like, so many of those things are, and that's common practice. Like, if someone's charging someone with what they're not, it's, I know, I'm just saying that that's one of the way, like, there's so many things that are so broken that we accept as the common practice, you know? But anyway, that's, oh, that's horrible what happened to me.
Yeah, no, no.
Because he was a really nice guy, and he was a young person, and we're all a little bit weird when we're young and trying to figure things out and things like that, you know what I mean? And he was an intense guy, you know, he didn't do anything, you know, he's not a bad person.
Yeah, and you know what's unfortunate? All right, you want to have your voice heard, you can either take this little time right here, but if you go to trial, you're getting slammed. You're getting 100% right. of everything. Well, that ain't right either.
Yeah, no. That's definitely not right. How about I come and I have the right to go to trial and I get the merits of my case on the merits. And if I use the system, why do I need to be punished with it? Why does it need to be like that? Just doesn't make sense.
No,
a lot of people are going to. Yeah, a lot of people. You have to be a true warrior. You know what I mean? A fearless individual to say, no, I'm going to stand up for my rights. And you know what I mean? Because they're going to make a run at you and go, if you do this and we're going to convict you, you're going to go. And it was something he didn't do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're kind of going off on a tangent here, but let me just kind of wrap this up. Tiger King. We can both agree. Goofy, funny, entertaining. Nobody that's really a threat. Somebody that's probably got addiction issues. All of those things I agree with. 30 years in prison because the FBI informant plied him with drugs and then baited him into conversations and then used those conversations against him. You think that's justice?
Right.
Come on, man. I mean, that's a cartoon.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a cartoon. If they're going to give a cartoon 30 years, what are they going to give to somebody that's real?
Right. So, yeah, no, that was a tangent, but I guess you're here to get to know me. And that's something that I feel strongly about that particular case. You know what I mean? Because that was that's my friend. That was my friend. We spent a lot of time together.
You and Larry Landless fought on the same card on your next fight when you fought Timothy Mendoza. Was that like a gentleman's bet or an agreement between you two?
I don't know why it just happened that way. It's like, yeah, I want to have a match. We started just deciding, yeah, we're going to have a match every now and then. And then it was like, oh, well, it'd be fun. Do it on the same show. You know?
Yeah. You guys ever asked to fight each other?
No one ever asked me if I
was. Oh, dude, that's a main event right there, boy. Two referees going at it.
Two guys that don't want to hurt each other. I don't know that would be a great main event.
Yeah. No. That would be sad. But it was fun seeing Larry do it. I remember, I'm not sure which one it was, but one of them, who did Larry fight on that?
Well, on that card?
Did he fight Manny?
I got to go. It was KOTC Hitmasters.
Yeah. Well, I just remember that Larry, he would throw.
Yes, you know, Manny Rodriguez.
He'd throw this combination. He'd throw this combination like ping, ping. And then he'd throw a kick. And and he would always practice the kick with the spinning back fist.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like he would go, boom, 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 kick, spin. I go, Larry, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to throw the kick and bring it back. Spinning back fist is not the answer. They're not bringing the kick back. Don't
do it. He kept doing it over and over again. Yeah.
And he landed it.
Yep. he stole the last and, the second round.
Yeah. He landed it. And it was like, and it was a delayed reaction too. I remember he hit him with it and it was a late reaction. And then, but it was right on the chin. And then the guy falls and Larry jumped on him. Yeah.
We called that one. That one was called the Larry Hail Mary.
Yeah,
because he was having a tough time in that second round, but yeah, that saved the match for him.
On October 8, 2006, you fought in Spirit FC, South Korea's largest MMA promotion, still the largest MMA promotion there. Mm-hmm. And you fought Jun Gayu Choi.
Mm-hmm.
What about warming up in the locker room? Was there an incident involving?
Okay, was a lot of fun. Yeah, first of all, that was a lot of fun. I got there. I remember, okay, so the promoter, Bumsuck Kim, I remember I got a cut. I remember I was trying to get my stuff out and he opened the door and hit my head. I got a little cut there. But I was just saying the promoter's name to see if you could keep a straight face.
That's an unfortunate name.
I was trying to test you. I remember that. Then I was like, man, he's like, and when he told me, he goes, my name is Bumsa Kim. He's like, hey, well, you can just call me BK. And I was like, no, I'm an adult. I can say Bumsa. I'm not Beavis or Butthead here. I remember practicing in the mirror. Bumsa. Bumsa, what's happening? You know, and but anyway, at that show, Savant was with me. And also, what was really fun about that is that Laborio was there with one of his fighters, and he decided he was going to help me warm up and be in my corner too. And that was like a really cool thing. You know, I got to go to Korea. I was really wasn't ready for it. You know, I got off the ring out of the plane, and they were there with, you know, media to interview me. And yeah, but Savant was there with me, and Savant's got a lot. He's a pretty intense energy. And Hector Lombard was there, and he's a pretty intense energy. And then somehow we're all near each other, and they started helping each other warm up and helping. He was helping Hector, and their energies didn't move well together. And I guess I'm like, man, this guy's got to fight today. Yeah, come on here, try to get Saban away from him. You know, because Hector's a pretty intense guy. Yeah, but Saban's an intense guy too. Savant's funny. He can get really intense, Bubba. One time he got a fight in Kansas, and I went out there with him. And I remember I was like, they asked me to referee, and they go, bring somebody out to fight. And so Savant's like, okay, he went and took a fight. And the whole time he'd been watching this Vanderlei Silva's greatest hits, but we're not fighting pride rules. So anyway. But as we're going out there, I remember he was just piling away every little bit of thing to be angry with. And man, anyway, that what you're talking about, that happened. They were kind of arguing backstage. But Hector had a tough fight. I'll tell you that he won, but that Korean guy, man, none of those guys at that show were chumps. Those guys were all really tough guys. That guy and the guy who's fighting didn't look that athletic. He was kind of chubby. And he was giving it to Hector. But Hector just kept coming and, you know, eventually got him.
When you look at Spirit FC, like this is really kind of going down a rabbit hole. Dennis Kang cut his teeth there. When Dennis Kang was fighting there, man, dude, it was the talent level was possibly the worst I've seen outside of like Latin America, where there was no wrestling at that time. Mm-hmm. And from that point to when you and Hector Lombard got there, oh my God, was there a huge difference?
No, that guy I thought was tough, man. He was
They could take pain, man.
He could take. Well, I didn't know anything about it. He was famous for like knowing because he has this big, thick head, and he could box, and he was famous for like no one being able to hurt him. And I was like, man, this dude is tough. I remember I hit him with a pretty good shot. Yeah,
you hit him with a lot in the first round.
Yeah. Then I gassed out and, you know, I wasn't able to, everything I did didn't look like it made any sense. I think I was trying to take him down and ended up doing a sloppy, you know, I was like, I think at that point I was trying to do like the Hoist Gracie 101, Gracie Academy, the drop back trip and ended up pulling him on top of me. And yeah, he got me with a Americana. I just had me energy left, but I had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the key is to travel as a corner. That is the most fun you're going to have.
Yeah. But I had a lot of fun that trip, actually. Even though I lost, I had a lot of that. It was so much fun fighting in that thing. And like the first round, I had a lot of fun in the first round. And I had a lot of fun the second round. I think I probably, but by the time I had hurt him in the first round, I think like they repositioned us. Cause that's the thing is like I dropped him and then they stood him up and then they fixed his cut. But that's the way they do it in Asia. So over here, that was kind of strange to me. But in Asia, because of the TV rights, they have to keep, they don't want a lot of blood or whatever. So,
okay. You're the second person that mentioned this to me. Japan, Korea, they frown upon it, which is why they didn't have elbows to the head in Pride. Mm-hmm. Is that true? They really frown upon the blood, the bloody aspect?
Yeah. So that's the thing about it is like certain parts of in Asia, I mean, the promoters are really serious about it because they could lose their television contract. And so, they frown on the blood, like the bloody matches.
Saki Kibara was just at the last BKFC. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, here, way BKFC runs, you've got one doctor ringside, you've got two in the back stitching full time. Mm-hmm. it's exactly what it is, the opposite of what it is that they're looking for. If what you're saying is true,
but I don't know if that's true at this time. But that was what was going on during that time. Okay. They're going to stop. They're going to clean people up, you know, or maybe they stop and cleaned him up. I don't know, but I've been instructed about that in other shows in Asia, and that's a tough thing as far as for being a referee. As far as for, I've had a couple of fights this time that was so bloody, but you know that it's nothing that's a danger to the fighter, and you're going to take a win from a guy just because it's gross. It's like, it's hard to do that, you know.
You can't.
But at the same time, you know, you have something that's really gross, and someone's sitting like, man, our sport could lose a lot of eyes right here, or have the wrong impression about what we're about because this match is just so bloody, you know, and the promoter's sitting there thinking about, man, am I going to lose my television contract? Because this is gross, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I wish somebody.
Huh? Did you ever have that in your mouth, that blood, that metallic taste in your mouth because you're so close to it? You have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fight in particular that kind of comes to mind?
There's one. I mean, there's a couple of bloody fights. I mean, I wrestled a bloody fight. I think it was Bubba. There's a lot of blood. Yeah. There's a lot of bloody fights I refereed. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That taste in your mouth, it's like chewing on dirty pennies. It's like, it's weird.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Once it's there, you know, they could kind of clean the cage up a little bit or whatever, but it's like, it smells like that afterwards. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Savant Young, what would you describe your relationship with him?
Oh, he's one of my best friends. Yeah, we've been friends since before MMA, you know. We had a lot of things that we'd run into each other from just for common interest. And then one time he pops into to the Submission Factory where Joey and I were with Larry, and you know, we start rolling around. I remember we were rolling and he did a heel hook. I was like, yeah, we don't do heel hooks here right now. He's like, well, we do. Because he trained with Joe Charles, yeah.
Judo Joe Charles.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The ghetto man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was one of your early instructors as well, correct?
Well, no, I wouldn't call him instructor, but he was nice enough to let me come train with him sometimes. But I didn't get to spend that much time with him. Like every now and then I would get to get out there and move around with him, you know? Yeah. And get, you know, he was like, him and Savant and Damon were there. But I wasn't like one of his core guys, you know, just he let me come through sometime. But I'll tell you one thing, man, he was, yeah, that guy was tough, you know?
Yeah. The one thing about Savant Young, I mean, obviously you're talking about Joe Charles right there. Savant Young, he's incredibly modest. Like I've never met him, but mm-hmm. I know a lot about him. And the things that define his character in ways that most people can't even wrap their heads around are no big deal to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really good guy. And yeah, that's why, you know, he's have so much success in all his adventures, because he's a really good person. And so if he's doing something, people usually want to be a part of it and help out.
How can you not? How can you
not? Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Your last fight, Dave Legino at Cage Rage, July 14th, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
All the way in Europe, man.
Yeah.
So you went, what, California, Arizona, South Korea?
Yeah, now I'm out there. And that was fun in a sense, but that was kind of like, you know, I think I could have shown a lot better. I had a lot of injuries and wasn't able to train, but it was the last time I was going to ever get to fight. They told me, hey, if you don't take this one, we're going to make some rules where referees can't fight anymore. You're going to have to choose one. And I knew the world was not going to miss me as a fighter. Yeah. So, yeah.
Legino, he doesn't have a pretty record, but he's got wins over Chemo and Dan Severn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude's legit. Yeah. He's legit.
Yeah. No, he's no chump. Yeah. He wasn't a chump. He wasn't that, you know, people say he's not that great of a fighter, but yeah, he was a big, solid, real, you know, heavyweight. And I'm like a small, fat heavyweight. You know,
you were also supposed to fight Travis Luter at one point on Cage Rage 12.
No, no. Maybe somebody told you that, but no, I wasn't supposed to that.
Really? I got their press release.
No, I was never asked that.
Okay.
That could be a Javi Vasquez like situation where they just used a name.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, no, that's, you know what? You might be right on that. Were you ever asked to cut your hair for refereeing?
Somebody mentioned it that to get licensed, that someone said, but you know, I don't know if the person who supposedly, that's why I'm saying the person who told the person, because I never told to the person who said to do this, you have to. But okay. I remember I was like, I'm going to call Al Sharpton.
Okay.
I don't know Al Sharpton, but that was my threat.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Were you physically at King of the Cage 1?
Was that the one on the tennis court?
Yes.
I don't think I was there on the tennis court one. I think I was there at the Saboba one.
Okay, so that's the second one you were at.
Yeah.
I know you were at the third. You were for sure at the third.
Yeah, I think I was at the second
one. And I think, did you
pretty
understand
sure the second?
Did you understand at that time that King of the Cage would be one of the biggest organizations, the second largest organization in the world at one point?
At one point it really was. You know, I did not, I knew it was something special. I did not realize, you know, when we first started doing it, what it was going to be. But I remember it was there was a lot of big buzz about it. And man, some of the things that happened, like sometimes I was there and we'd see, you know, there's 8,000 people drove out to the, you know, middle of the desert for this in an outdoor arena. You know, and it was a really special thing, King of the Cage. Yeah, I just talked to Terry yesterday.
Really?
You know, he called me because we're going to, a couple of us from the, you know, old days are going to get together and have dinner with Cecil Peoples. Yeah. Hang out with the homie. You know, Cecil Peoples helped us a lot. You know, when we first got there, you know, as far as for learning how to do things, like just little things that, you know, that we all know now, but you know, in the beginning, if two judges had it for one guy and the other guy, two judges had it for red and then the other judge had it
for blue, they'd call it a draw.
Yeah And if there was,
it was crazy. It was crazy.
And then some of the other things, like there's a couple of things like that. Oh, and if two judges had it a draw and one judge had it for blue, two had it for red to a draw and one had it for blue, we would call it for blue.
Yes.
Huh.
And we didn't know that. We go, well, that makes sense because these guys said it's a draw, but then the blue. So that tips the scale. Goes no. It's a majority draw. We didn't know what a majority draw was at that time.
Wow.
Yet they trusted us.
Yeah. Here in the Midwest, what they would do is they would do two round fights, and it wasn't because, wow, you know, these guys, we just don't pay enough for three rounds. No. They were hoping for draws so they wouldn't have to pay a win purse. That's why you see so many draws coming out of the Midwest.
Wow. Well, we would do two round fights out here. Just because they didn't want, I mean, because it's hard. I mean, doing three 5-minute rounds is a hard thing. It doesn't sound like it, but that the early days, U.S. King of the Cage did two 5-minute rounds, but they had a different scoring system so that you'd be able to get a result. So King of the Cage had they weren't using the 10-point must system, and he had a different scoring system that was based on what, aggression. Punching and striking and then grappling.
Were you at the Chris Brennan, Kevin Hogan fight where the announcer said that Chris Brennan was from Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu representing Marco Huas, even though he had split a few weeks prior and it was the announcer's fault, not Brennan's fault. And there was almost a full on riot backstage.
I'm not sure if I remember that, but was it at King of the Cage?
Yes.
I was there, but you know, there's some, so many things happened there that, yeah, I probably missed that detail.
Didn't care.
Even though it sounds like there was almost a riot back and people were yelling at each other and whatever, people were always yelling at each other. And that was, they didn't end up fighting, I don't think, right, about it. And the match happened. Yeah. So that right there was a detail. There's a detail that back in those days, you know, Brennan used to threaten to, you know, sock me in the face every time I did a rules meeting, you know, and cuss me out every time I did a rules meeting. And it became my joke. It was like, hey, you guys can cuss me out, whatever. And I would, that's how it started off the rules meeting. Chris Brennan cusses me out every show, but we're here and we're doing this. So how about we just skip the formalities and get into this part, you know?
What about backstage when Obaki
Don Fry?
Don Fry.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember they were really about to get into it. And then Don Fry's like, no, I can't. I remember him saying, no, I can't give this away for free. We're going to give it away for free.
Don Fry really said that?
Yeah, he said, we can't give this away for free. I almost gave this away. I almost gave this away for free. What a fool.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah. Because they were mad. They were upset over the way he had choked his guy out, right? Choked the guy, but he was Dave Benito, the guy from Canada, but he was so disrespectful about it, right? Choked him out and was like, just threw him on the ground afterwards. And like, I don't think that, and I think he probably had some words for Fry, but I don't think he was, I think it was the way he did it was
a drunk Don Fry. He gave the finger to a drunk Don Fry. That's but even more dangerous.
Obaki had so much style, you know what I mean? Because he did it like, you know, like, all, let me do all the things I want to do. Do this, choke him out, throw him down, like, and you, bam, you know what I mean? It was just all at once, yeah.
Oh, the crowd was wild, too. That was a hell of a moment.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Wait, we're winding up. I can't end this interview without talking about Chris Lieben and Brian Sleeman in the WEC. I think it was WEC 9. I'm going for my head.
Right. Now you saw that fight, huh?
Herb, if you look at my Fight Pass account, I'm in like that 1%. I don't have another, but my wife hates me because that's the only thing I freaking watch. Sorry, go ahead.
That was a fun fight. I think that was the first time I'd ever refereed Lieben, but I had refereed Sleeman quite a bit. So I was kind of used to him. I kind of knew what, you know, that him, that, you know,
little bravado.
He's a rowdy guy. His bravado. He has no give whatsoever. He's going to fight a bunch of people that you think are going to beat him, but he doesn't have any quit. And also that if things get a little dirty, he's right there in his element, you know? Right. And that describes Lieben too. So I didn't know that much about him, but there was a lot of groin strikes and weird things like that. And, you know, a lot of, getting things back together and talking to Sleeman, and he's like trying to headbutt me and, you know, like, hey, come here, a friendly headbutt. Like, yes, I'm going to follow the rules type of a headbutt, you know?
Okay. All right. So this is Herb. You have to watch this fight again. Like there's so much more there. Well, first and foremost, Lieben's about to get knocked out. He throws a groin blow. We had Chris Lieben on and he goes, it was absolutely intentional. I was about to lose the fight. That's why I kicked him in a groin. Mm-hmm. Sleeman says, oh my God, it hurts. You restart. Sleeman's about to finish him again. Lieben hits him with another groin shot. Lieben in our interview said, I also did that one intentional because I was about to lose again. This time, Sleeman goes, screw this, I'm out of here, and leaves the cage all hurt. Lieben's talking shit to him from the cage. Sleeman's on a catwalk talking shit back. The audience starts chanting, let them fight, let them fight. And then you're in a cage just kind of, you know, being cool. You're being Herb Dean. Then they bring Sleeman back in and they restart the fight again after you stopped it.
Yeah, and those early WECs.
Greatest.
There was a lot of greatest that wouldn't have happened. Yeah, a lot of things that wouldn't have happened. I think Sleeman did a couple of groin shots too to get back, right?
He did
a couple of dirty things.
Yeah, he did.
He did some dirty things like that too. I mean, but yeah. Lieben, yeah, definitely. I've talked to Lieben about that since then. Lieben, as far as in some other fighters, they're like, yeah, every groin shot I threw, I did it on purpose. There's a couple of guys who said that. Yeah.
The
Throughout their whole career. Everything.
Yeah. The audience taunted Sleeman and the promotions. He goes, man, well, let's just let him fight a, you know, another guy.
There was someone who was the commissioner of that, right? Was he was the commissioner at that time, right?
I think it
he called himself. There's a guy who, his name was Paul. His name was Paul.
Is this pre Armando Garcia?
No, it wasn't the commission of California. He called himself the commission for all these shows. I think he did the IFC, and then he was in charge of that part.
Paul Smith literally was one of the owners of the WEC, and I think he still works for the UFC. He actually went with the UFC.
You're thinking of Reed Harris.
I'm thinking of Reed Harris. You're right.
So there's Paul Smith, I believe. Yeah, he was a part of that. And so he kind of made the rules, you know. I remember one time there was a fight out of the fighter. I disqualified him. He just came in and said, we're overturning that disqualification. Yeah. You know.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So he made the rules, and you know, and they were appropriate. I mean, it was a rough time, you know what I mean? So it was you know, he kept things moving, you know, but there's me. I was like, man, this dude needs to be disqualified. It's like, he was already, and he was right. He was like, well, the guy was ass was already kicked before he did the dirty stuff. And I'm going to call it a win. And he was right. The guy, his butt was kicked. There was no need for the dirty stuff. But I was like, man, I think we should take the win from him for the dirtiness.
Joey, this guy refereed at King of the Cage went wild.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
I did. Yes, was there. That was also, notice that was also when Here Comes the Boom, right?
Oh, did they have one that was raining?
They pick all the different things that happened from these, all those things, like the cage falling apart. They brought them all from real things that happened.
So at Wet n' Wild, which is where Rafael Torre fought Loca Keanu, but I tell you, the one crazy fight, you refereed it, Dean Lister lost to Jason Flynn.
Wow.
Jason Flynn was no punk.
He wasn't a punk, but Dean Lister, okay.
Jason Flynn was a beast, though. Where's Jason Flynn from?
Militage.
That's what I'm saying. He's from the Midwest. One of those guys who had a lot of MMA fights, you know what I mean? Probably. How many fights did he have? Or he's out there with really tough guys where they fought hard, you know?
I think he had like 10 or...
Yeah.
He had like 10 or 12. And Lister, it was like his second fight, I think.
But Lister, like that rain made everything slick.
Yep.
You popped.
Who else fought on there? There's that little kind of little short guy from
Hurley. Joe Hurley and Charlie Collier were on that card.
Okay. And then there's
Charlie Kohler. Come on, Kohler. Bro.
Oh yeah, Charlie Kohler. Yep. That was and then a lot of people fought on that. Eve Edwards fight on that?
I don't know if Eve was, but Rico Rodriguez fought Paul Bonatello.
Bonatello,
yes.
And then there was this. Remember, there was this one guy who was a really good fighter, but he was short, so he had to jump in to make everything happen, and he couldn't because it was so slippery, you know. So his opponent was taller, just sat there and just poked at him and poked, and you couldn't do anything. You couldn't do any movement because it was so wet, you know.
That Galindo? Because Galindo was on that card.
Tony Galindo was on that card.
No, yeah. Somebody else. It was this guy. Is he from Tucson or something? He's from, forgot where he's from, but somewhere in Arizona. Shorter kickboxer guy.
All right. Well, you're on the administrative side. What is the conversation like when they say, hey, guys, we're about to get into like a thunderstorm with actual lightning taking place and the rain's coming down sideways? But we're going to continue with the show. Like, what? How does that conversation take place?
Well, that conversation, it's like, okay, we're going to continue with the show. That thing was like, that was like a learning experience. That was like, hey, we did this, but I don't think ever again. That was like, this was early in those days. It was like, you know, where you're learning things, like, because the thing about it was so unfair for the fighters, you know? So unfair for some of the guys, you know, because it definitely affected their wins.
King of the Cage had brought in guys from Pride, that Alexander Utzka. There was a couple of other ones. So they had flown him all the way from Japan, and they just were not going to cancel the fights regardless.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there. Yeah, they're not going to. They were not going to cancel. They spent a lot of money to try to make it happen. They weren't going to do it.
Okay,
no. they made lemons. You know, made lemonade out of lemons. Like, hey, we're going to call it Wet and Wild and sell some DVDs. You know,
you were right. Eves Edwards was on that card. He fought Jeremy Williams and lost the split decision.
Mm-hmm. Eve Edwards, in my opinion, was the first real martial artist putting everything together. Like the guy that was not proficient, good or great at everything.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, he was.
Yeah, he really was one of those early guys. You also, you were, there's a lot of people that you refereed their debuts in King of the Cage. Forrest Griffin and Diego Sanchez. But one of the kind of hidden gems, Jason House versus James Fanisher. Jason House is the owner of the largest MMA management organization in the world.
What's really funny is, like, did I referee that fight?
Yes.
That's crazy because, yeah, that's crazy because, like, you know, House and I never talk about that. And I see him all the time. He's like,
I think you got two of his fights. I think you got two of his fights.
It's crazy the career that he built, you know? Always a very, very humble person, you know? And just hardworking. He's one of those people that's like, man, he probably has more UFC fighters on his roster. More of his guys are on the roster than, yeah, anyone else.
Well, I can tell you when somebody is 5-0 on the region, dude, I'm addicted to the independent grind. On the regional scene, if you're 5 or 6-0, you're probably already signed by Iridium and you're probably 4 or 5 fights away from being in the UFC. That's
right.
Like his tentacles. And like I, through a friend, they asked me to reach out to people in Latin America. I speak fluent Spanish. It's even in Latin America.
Yeah, no, his work ethic. And I meet some of the guys that he has working with him. He's really, really built something, man. And he worked really hard to do it.
Yeah, you referee Diego Sanchez, Shannon Rich, Forrest Griffin, Steve Seiya. Yeah, bro. Like you've been there and done that, man.
Yeah, no, I've got to. It's been an amazing ride. The things in this sport like that I've got to do, and it's been it's been amazing. I've got to be a part of so many. Every time I've like, man, that was the most incredible thing that just happened. Next week, it's always something else. It's like, wow, that blows that away. Right?
Let me just give some highlights. Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, you were the ref. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Quentin, I'll tell you, the ref, Forrest Griffin and
Stephen Bonner.
Stephen Bonner.
Yes. Yeah, you know, when you come back on again, I mean, after Joey gets done dog sitting many, many more times and he's out of favor. The Ultimate Fighter season one, I'd like to just do something dedicated on that along with the Ultimate Fighter because your contributions go largely ignored in regards to that. And it's probably one of the most important. You kept your mouth shut. Dude, you kept your mouth shut, bro.
Oh, I'll tell you some stuff about some of that too when we come back. There's some stories. Yeah, but let's see how long we've been doing this. We got to see how you're doing, right?
Yeah, we're going to wrap up. Herb, one question. Fuckles is the screen name, mixedmartialarts.com. He's asking about the memes that go around about that of yourself. Do you like them, dislike them, laugh? What's your thoughts?
I laugh. I think a lot of them, I mean, you know, it's. Some of them, I'm just like, man, that's, yeah, it's, I didn't expect it. And I think it's so much that it's kind of cool that people choose me. Like, I'm honored that, like, people have so much fun with me. You know what I mean? Some of these memes are hilarious and creative. Yeah. And, especially that one, the last thing with the little slide. People had so much fun with that.
Yes.
Herb, no, they have a lot of fun with me.
Absolute pleasure. We've taken a ton of your time, man. Honestly, brother, I can't wait to meet you in California when BKFC goes out to LA. Hoping to get a picture with you, man. Thank you for your time, bro.
All right, thank you. See you out there.
Herb, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
Joey.
I told you I'd get her. I told you it 9 months ago, but all right. I made good.
Man, dude, we had him for about a little over an hour and a half. That was good. We got through his fight career.
Yeah. Oh, you could talk to him. We could do 15 hours with him, dude, if he was willing.
All right. So in generally speaking, when we do our notes and our prep and stuff like that, so 6 pages of notes generally give us about 2 hours of time. Okay. That's just kind of how like conversation, like I've got everything written down, but I mean, Joey, we share them and they're conversational pivot points. They're nothing like stuck in stone, but they also keep us organized. And here we're almost 2 hours. We only went through 3 pages, and like these other 6 right here are very intense. None of them, very few of them involve the UFC, and his UFC shit.
Oh yeah.
Freaking bonkers. It's bonkers. Yeah.
We could do a whole episode just talking about title fights in the UFC that he refereed.
Oh my God.
That we didn't even mention. He refed Conor McGregor and Khabib. We didn't, you know, when you were talking about the biggest fights he's ever done, I mean, that was the biggest UFC pay-per-view sales ever.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we need. Well, first off, if you're on iTunes, you got to leave us a review. There is an interview show. This dude's a turd. Like, I don't want to say his name because that wouldn't be right. Joey, awful, yes or no?
He doesn't do what we do. We'll just say that.
It's very, very different. It's just... The reason I started this show was because his was so bad. Like, it drove me so freaking crazy. Like, we started this. He's got more positive reviews than we do. It hurt my feelings, Joey.
I know.
It hurt my feelings. Okay, that's all I'm going to say.
Audience, we got to keep Mike off the bottle.
You know, please listen to
leave us a review, okay?
I'll make the news. Right. I'll make the news with an LOP t-shirt. So I won't even be able to get to enjoy my success.
When a guy licensed to carry a firearm says he's going to make the news, it's not usually for good shit. That's all I'm saying.
No. Absolutely not. Dean, dude, do we do that? Do we do a UFC title fights? Holy shit.
That'd be a great one. How could you not? How could you not do that?
Oh my fucking God. We can do title fights and undercard fights. Holy shit. Dude, he refereed Dan Henderson versus Fedor and Fedor versus Ryan Bader when they brought in all the like the studs. He was also, oh my dude, there's so much. The KJ Nunes, Nick Diaz.
Yeah. Speaking of KJ.
No. I think it's KJ. We'll have him. I think it's actually KJ News versus Eve Edwards. I think he did that one.
Probably.
He did Gilbert Evel versus Houston Alexander on the independent grind, as well as Dunes on the undercard, Justin Frazier versus Derek Lewis. Nick Diaz versus Joe Hurley, he did in WEC 6. Banuelos versus Eddie Weiland, WEC 20. That was, to me, that's like the 135-pound world title fight, like when it got its legitimacy. Bro, Leon Edwards versus Usman. 2, I know there was some locker room conversation there that like both people had conversations with Herb about certain things that they didn't like about the other fighter. Frank Shamrock versus Renzo Gracie when Shamrock got DQ'd for knees to the head. Holy fuck, bro. These are just the notes I had in my phone. Jeremy Horn versus Chael Sonnen on the independent grind. Jeremy Horn wins. And the rematch in the UFC 60.
Holy Jeremy fuck, Horn wins.
Dude, yep.
Yep.
Dude. Fucking first ballot Hall of Famer. And I tell you, first ballot Hall of Famer. Easily.
Yeah. What would it take for him to not be a first ballot Hall of Famer? I don't even want to say. He'd have to do something terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and if he did, he'd probably just kind of get elected kind of like under the radar where we just don't announce it. We just put him in. Yeah.
No, there's no chance he's not in that hall.
There's a few different – there's consumers, and then there's people that actually do the work. You know, the people that kind of make the magic happen, the grease in the gears. And the people in the Hall of Fame are like that top echelon of people that, you know, have put their body of work forward.
Right.
He's in that top 1% of that top 1% in terms of his body of work. And that's a fact.
Yeah. Yep. He became a household name. And when I knew him, he was just reffing on Indian casinos in a sport that half the country had never heard of. So
were you surprised at how fast he got popular?
No, because there was a vacuum. He was putting in the work on the King of the Cage level, all the Indian casino stuff. So once he got into the UFC, I mean, then it's hit or miss if it doesn't go well for you. But as soon as I saw the Frank Mir, Tim Sylvia arm break, once he had the balls to make the right call and stick to it, in that case, I said, dude, he's along for the ride. He's going to be the next John McCarthy.
Joey, in that fight, that was his second UFC fight that he had ever refereed. So he's still new in their eyes. Yeah. And you know, even though you know, it's kind of a small community, the entire audience turned against him. The Tim Sylvia was saying, it's not, there's nothing wrong with me. You stopped it wrong. Tim Sylvia was no selling an injury. The doctor from Las Vegas, the redhead, always very professional, she even said, there's nothing wrong with this. And Herb went against the color commentary booth, the live audience, the Las Vegas doctor and the commission, and said, nope, I'm right. And then when Joe Rogan was able to get the replay, the audience went from boo, boo, boo to oh! And the only one that saw it, Herb Dean.
I was in that audience and I heard the shit that the audience was saying about Herb, and it was getting rowdy. I honestly feared for Herb's safety in that moment until they did the replay on the big screen, and it just gasps.
He never faded though. Like he stood by his decision. Like, hey, dude, like you want to go trivia with me? There's going to be times where I'm like, wrong, I'm right. And I'm wrong. I usually blame the Mandela effect at that point. Like some interdimensional beings changed the past history in order to make this moment happen. So you're right. But you know, that doesn't really go far in certain people's eyes. But Herb always, always stood by it. And you know, he also had the Nogueira thing, like that nobody talks about. Nobody talks about the Nogueira break. It's always the Tim, you know, the Tim Sylvia. Yeah. So
well, because with the Nogueira one, he didn't have to go against the fighter, wasn't saying I'm fine.
He knew it was gonna break and he let it happen because that's the sport. Like if he would have stopped it, imagine the shit he would have got from the fans, the commentary booth, and Nogueira, especially Nogueira.
Oh yeah, Nogueira to this day would say I was about to get out of it.
Oh my god, dude.
Yeah, Herb always had the balls to stand behind his conviction, and that's rare. You met another one of my friends this week, Mike Beltran. He's kind of got the same confidence to stand behind his decision, and that's what makes those guys good refs.
You know what, dude? We should have brought up Joe Camacho a little bit more. Yeah.
He hinted at a willingness to do another episode. So I'm probably going to have to babysit his dog again, but I love that dog.
Dude, Derek Lewis, it's Herb Dean's fault after Curtis Blaydes, even though Herb, you know, did his job. Like there's so much there, man. There's so much there. Yeah.
Well, he's in the books. Who we got next?
I think we got Jeff Curran next. Remco Pardue, I'm going to try to knock out this Sunday. Those
KJ
two.
Nunes?
KJ Nunes, maybe we can get him this Sunday too. So KJ's a fireman. Timmy KJ, Ford. Yeah, go ahead.
KJ Nunes is doing my old job in my old station. So that was a surprise.
So KJ Nunes, Tim Ford, who got us Dean Lister, bro, that guy gets us Dean Lister and KJ Nunes. I'm probably going to send him another bag of muff. So
yes, you should.
And KJ just said, I haven't done an interview in 10 years. This will be my last. Just so you know, I will not do another interview. And Tim, phenomenal guy, goes, oh, it's all right, dude. I'm going to sit in it with you. No. I'm going to sit in it with you, dude. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. So we'll have Tim co-piloting again, which is always cool. It's always cool. So Joey.
All right.
Who else from California? I've heard John Lewis's name thrown around, but I don't
that
know.
That hinges on Anthony, so we shall see.
A lot of silence there. Go ahead. What else?
Like, anything share, else? Subscribe. That's it.
Wait, who else do we got on the California side? Who else can we grab?
I don't know. I can rack my brain, but I got to get back out of this room so I don't get divorced.
All right. Love you, brother. See you, Joe.
See you.
Bye.
Check out the full interview on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms.